is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
We watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better or can we make them weird? This week, we're talking about You've Got Mail from 1998. It's directed by Nora Ephron, who also wrote the screenplay with her sister Delia Ephron, based on a play by Miklos Laszlo. It stars Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, and Miss Rhode Island. It features Dave Chappelle, who got this part because he turned down the role of Bubba in Forrest Gump. Because he was like, it's not going to do that well. And he obviously expressed regret about it. And Tom Hanks was like, well, you can be in this one. I mean, he talked to Nora Ephron about it. So,
right.
That is a very good reason to be cast, but also a very sad reason to be cast.
Wow.
Also, Michael Palin was in this as a benevolent writer who liked to do readings at the shop, but was cut from the film, which I'm like, why would you
cut a python from this film?
So like I said, this is sort of generationally fourth degree based on a Hungarian play. And in the original, the two rivals work in a perfume shop. And then it's been adapted for stage and seen in multiple versions, like stage versions, musical versions. They've sold leather goods, music supplies. Here they sell books. But ostensibly, this is a remake of the film version, The Shop Around the Corner from 1940.
Oh, wait. Okay, the original plays in a perfume shop?
Yeah. Is the
musical She Loves Me?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay. Theater like background is kicking in hard right now. Uh-huh. All right. And I could see this as a play.
Yeah, and it's funny totally because She Loves Me, I think, is like the third or fourth adaptation. So it like moved back to the perfume shop from the other places where it had been. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the Hungarian title, but it's usually in English. The original play is called Parfumerie or Parfumerie, which is French, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's fancier.
Yeah.
And didn't the original movie have Jimmy Stewart?
I think so.
Good old Jimmy Stewart. I do an awful Jimmy Stewart impression.
Yeah, that is, I think that's like Jimmy Stewart by way of Dana Carvey, maybe.
So can I tell you, in high school, when we did theater together, one of my audition monologues was the Harvey monologue where he talks about how he met Harvey. But I just did a bad Jimmy Stewart impression the whole time because I didn't know any better. I was a kid. It was like my first year doing theater. And our teacher, shout out, hi Jenny Gardner, if you're listening. our teacher was like, good work. If you ever do monologues again, don't do impressions. That's not the same thing. That's not acting.
But I mean, sometimes it is.
And he said, you can call me Harvey.
I feel like this is bonus material for the Patreon. Just AJ doing Jimmy Stewart. I can do Church Lady. Also, I love that Meg Ryan got her very first computer during the filming of this.
Really?
Apparently.
I guess it was 98, like, or 97 probably when they filmed it.
Yeah, and it's really weird to think about this time.
Yeah. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, Pontus asked me actually when we were working, he was like, did you have like AOL Instant Messenger while you lived in the States? And to me, that was such a like, that's like asking, did you wear shoes? Because obviously,
yeah,
but in
everyone
in
had
Sweden,
it.
Obviously people didn't have AOL Instant Messenger. We had ICQ.
Why wouldn't you have AOL in Sweden?
Because it's America Online.
Oh, shut the front door. Okay. Yep. That checks out. That was an honest question. Oh boy. It's early.
I did keep my Instant Messenger account when we moved back to talk to people like you, for instance. But yeah. But like 98, cause like I made my first website in probably like 95 or 96. Like that's when I started hanging out online. And this is pretty much like when everyone started hanging out online. So, and it's just that time when it's a little weird that they keep talking after a chat room, but not super weird, but kind of weird because also they're adults. I think it's kind of the equivalent, I think maybe of like, I have a TikTok account, like for me now of the same age, or maybe not.
Yeah, it's
I
like
don't know.
I'm trying this new thing out.
Yeah. Because, like, now it's not weird to say that you met on the internet. It's almost weirder if you're like, we met at work, and people are like, wow, you still do that?
Yeah, Jenna and I met in person, and she's, like, one of the few people I've dated in the last, you know, 10 years, 10 plus years, that I didn't meet online. You know, it's weird.
So you watched this recently, but I'm assuming you'd seen it before.
Yeah, I've seen it a handful of times. Yeah, what about you?
Oh, yeah, no, I've seen this a bunch of times. I don't know if I saw it right when it came out. I probably did, but I've seen it a bunch of times.
I feel like
And it's funny because, like, I think this is one of those movies that just leaves, I think, has every time just left me with a general feeling. And, like, I don't remember, like, a lot of the details are like, oh, yeah, right. And some I have completely forgotten. But it is, you know, it's an Efron. And it also, like, it has so many Efron elements and so many elements of, like, Sleepless in Seattle and stuff. So.
Yeah. This just got me thinking, too, of, the date. Because you're talking about your website and things like that. Definitely, I remember live journaling all through high school. And that was, like, my first foray into HTML because you could, like, customize your page. But then it also made me remember, have you ever seen the clip from the Today Show where they try to describe what the internet is? It's, like, from, like, 94 or 95.
I probably have.
We should
link
put,
it.
Like, an insert right now of the audio.
I'll see if or I link can find to it.
It's on YouTube.
I love it's all so early funny. Descriptions of the internet.
It's so funny because they try to describe it like in layman's terms, and it's like I always forget how early days this was for like average Joe having the internet and what a novelty it was. And like the You've Got Mail, you would log into AOL and you would have mail and it was like exciting. And then you would wait 10 minutes for your mail to download.
And like, you know, there were publications like magazines and books published that were just like, these are all the websites on the internet. Like you could have something that was thinner than your average phone book, which is also a very dated reference. But like, you know, just basically like a pamphlet, like here is all the places you can go. I mean, obviously, the Frank's rant about, you know, the downfall of society and all that is an eternal one and has been said about basically, you know, slate boards, reading quietly instead of reading out loud, all these things.
Yeah.
But it's really funny to, it was funny 2 or 3 years ago to think about this as well. But like this past year and right now, it's like, oh, I am beyond grateful that I can communicate with people and, you know, just friends and like read whether just like consume material and be able to, you know, uphold friendships.
Yeah. Imagine how challenging this last year would have been without video conferencing, without like on demand
anything,
television and movies and video games and like all the things that people like turn to.
I do kind of like the idea of calling someone to like order your groceries just because it would be so absurd, but it would be very impractical. And I actually thought about that towards the end as well of like, you know, the idea of protecting small shops and small businesses, which has, you know, been a discussion over the past decades or more, but very much again, like became a thing. Also, I really started thinking about it when she has a cold and he's like, I'll come up anyway. And I'm like, no.
Oh, no. Yeah.
All right. Before we talk more about the movie, briefly, what is this movie about?
I turn on my computer. I go online.
Welcome.
And my breath catches in my chest until I hear three little words.
You got mail.
What is going on with you?
Is it infidelity if you're involved with someone on email?
This woman is the most adorable creature I've ever been in contact with.
Have you had sex?
Of course not. I don't even know her.
No, I mean cyber sex.
No?
Well, no, don't do it. The minute you do, they lose all respect for you.
In a city where everyone's looking for someone, Joe and Kathleen have discovered the best way to meet someone.
Hi.
Is to never meet at all.
Email. It's really nothing. I don't know his name or what he does.
Look.
Or where he lives exactly. What?
He couldn't possibly be the rooftop killer.
All right. So this movie is a classic Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan rom-com. Meg Ryan plays Kathleen. She is dating Greg Kinnear, who is a typewriter aficionado and loves typing his articles that he writes.
I think he's like a critic, like a sort of an intellectual critic, writes for The Observer.
And he's like very gung-ho about like social justice causes, but very kind of like bougie white privileged social justice causes. They're in this relationship and we like jump right in and she's in this chat room and she has like this relationship with a guy in the chat room where it's just like anonymous kind of how was your day type of stuff. So we're kind of introduced to the mid online relationship, I guess. And so, yeah, she's chatting to some guy. Her name is Shop Girl, which this was back in the day where you could get a name that didn't have 17 numbers attached to the end of it. So yeah, she's like chatting with this guy and they have these like rules about the relationship where it's like no specifics, no names, like nothing that can identify you. Right?
Which I get the feeling that it's because like it starts out as like, well, you know, everyone on the internet is an axe murderer. And right. Then I think it's sort of at least subconsciously becomes like a factor in the romance.
Yeah.
Of like, we are only a meeting of the minds, sort of.
Yeah. And you do get the feeling that there's like an intimacy with them based on their conversations that like borders on a romantic relationship. It just doesn't have any of the trappings. I mean, this movie would be very different if they were like, if we got into like cyber sex and stuff like that. That would be a very different movie.
I appreciate that they specify that they haven't.
Yeah. So yeah, so then we meet Tom Hanks and he is Joe Fox and he is one of the heirs of the Fox Book Megastore fortune, whatever. Oh, I forgot to mention Kathleen runs a tiny little mom and pop bookshop called The Shop Around the Corner. I guess a nod to the movie. They're in like, I don't know, the Upper West Side maybe, and around the corner from her shop, a new Fox Book Superstore is about to open in 1998, just in time to go bankrupt. I was like thinking about that the whole movie. I was like, they're opening this like mega bookstore and in 5 years, Amazon is going to put that bookstore out of business.
Yeah, because I was thinking even before, because I checked and like it's like sort of a nod to like there was basically a real Barnes & Noble that opened on that block. The physical block in the 90s, and people were worried that I was going to put Shakespeare and Company around the block out of business. And then it closed, obviously, not that long after. But like, because I was thinking about, I love bookstores. I'm a book person. I love books.
Yeah.
But I was like, at this point, I would feel that going into a Barnes & Noble would feel like going in to support a small business.
Right.
Like compared to Amazon, you know?
There is a Barnes & Noble down the street from me, and it's like, every once in a while, I'll go there. I mean, there's a few good bookshops around, but like, they're very few and far between now. But like, if I'm looking for something specific that I know they're gonna have, and I can like, and it's moderately close to price, that's the thing about Amazon. Everything is so cheap. And that's the thing they talk about in this movie, like, undercutting all the prices, because you're getting people in there to buy coffee, to buy cappuccino. And espresso and, you know, have an experience.
And also you undercut the prices at a loss for a long time and until all the competitors fold. And okay, this is not a capitalism. I mean, it kind of is. But anyway, I guess go listen to Planet Money or something after you're done with this.
And then go buy a book from a local bookstore, even if it's a failing Barnes & Noble. Take money away from Jeff Bezos. So yeah, so he's like the kind of one of the big wigs in this family that's going to be setting up this, megastore. And this is also where we meet Dave Chappelle as his kind of best friend and going to be the manager of the branch, I guess.
And it's they're walking through the store that's being built, and it's so much like the scenes from Sleepless in Seattle when they're walking through like the building site, except there it's like a house, like a home, and here it's a huge, but it's the same. Like they're walking through and pointing at things,
and they're just like having like the classic Nora Ephron like witty banter conversations. Oh God, I didn't even. You're right, Julia. This is why you have the MA in this. So yeah, then you know, again, it's been a couple weeks since I watched this, but he ends up meeting up with his little aunt, who's like 10, and his half brother who's like 4 or 5 or something. And I was also thinking about this, and I was like, they do make like some kind of Modern Family-ish kind of jokes about like families are so wacky in the 90s, that your aunt can be 10 years old and you can be over 30. And I was like, our daughter's aunts and uncles are going to be her same age, effectively. Like, my mother-in-law has adopted 3 effectively babies. They're like newborn to 5. So that's going to be like, hi, Uncle Aiden.
Yeah, but it's not because both your dad and your grandfather are like on their 18th marriage.
Right. That's
to always a 22-year-old.
Yeah. Wealthy businessmen with young brides. So yeah, he's hanging out with his aunt and his half brother, and he goes to her store, and Kathleen's doing like live story time, which is very cute. And they strike up a little witty banter at the counter, and she asks his name, and he's like, Joe, just Joe. And the little brother keeps spelling Fox, and they rush out the door. Then later, we're at a big fancy party, like a publishing New York book fancy pants party. I don't know
what, this is where I was like, for a second, I was like, aw. I thought I'd never miss book releases and book events, and now I do. And then I was like, ooh, I'm the culture elite. That felt dirty.
I've never been to a book launch or a book release party. I need to like write a book so that I can do that. Cause I want to like be in a fancy apartment and have caviar. So yeah, so they're at a party and he gets outed as being Joe Fox of Fox Books. And she's like, how dare you come into my shop and blah, blah, blah. They have this big, like, you're my enemy moment.
Do you think that she reacts stronger because she was a little bit interested in him in the store?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's a legitimate annoyance, but...
Yeah, I would probably react strongly if, like, I knew my competitor had come into my business and, like, been all chummy with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think there's part of it is defensive about her shop. And part of it is...
They had a flirty moment.
Yeah, she was like flirting, and then she's like, oh, like flirting with the enemy. So then, you know, they have this kind of like snippy back and forth. Intercut with all this are like moments where they're chatting online with each other about their day and like how they have these interactions with people. And it's like, oh, wow. And, you know, nobody knows what's really happened. You know, they don't really know that they're talking about each other. So they decide online that they're finally going to meet. So they set up a time and a place. Joe goes to meet her there. She's supposed to have like a single rose and a book. And he's with Dave Chappelle to kind of like help him, you know, work up the courage to go in there and meet her. Dave Chappelle peeks in and he goes, oh, you're not going to like this. It's that lady from the bookstore. And so he's like, oh, shit. So he goes in anyway and pretends to just accidentally. And this is where the movie kind of like, he kind of starts to bother me because mm-hmm. he now has all the power because he knows who she is. But yeah, he goes in there and starts to like strike up a conversation with her, and they have like a flirty yet contentious little conversation at the table. And later online he says like, I'm sorry I stood you up. I'll tell you at some point why I couldn't be there. Because she's wondering, like, where is this guy I was supposed to meet? I'm sitting here talking to Joe Fox, the enemy. So as Fox Books gets going, the shop around the corner is kind of slowly dying. And her wacky employees are all kind of trying to find, you know, what's next in their lives.
And I kind of, it is very sort of, you know, on the nose and explicit. But I kind of appreciate that commentary of like everybody cares about the little business.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, and it's not just like everybody wants to buy cheap books. It's just like, it's hard to keep someone in your like everyday purchasing when they're a specialty shop.
Yeah.
So like everybody cares. Nobody wants to save it. And you could be like, well, that's, you know, that's just an argument for capitalism because the invisible hand will make sure we only have the stores we need or something. But I just appreciate that how everyone is like so enraged and shows up for like 3 days after there's an article, but then things are going to go back to the way they were.
Yeah, it does kind of remind me of the little kind of flash in the pan support moments we've been seeing like over the last year of like, hey, support this business, and like people will get like a flurry of support and then it'll just die down, and it's like, well, you need that to sustain.
And also they will get a ton of orders because they get attention from like a celebrity or something, and then people are super angry that a tiny, tiny producer can't, you know, deliver a million orders. Anyway, yeah. I will say I think I've forgotten after every time I've watched this that the store closes, because it feels like such a, like a narrative break, because it feels like it's so obvious that the store makes it.
It's gonna make it. I'm right there with you. I always feel like, oh yeah, every time I'm watching it, I'm like, oh yeah, the store is closed. Like, there's real consequences in this movie. Like, there's real capitalism at play. Yeah, so the store is kind of going under, and Joe and Kathleen actually end up having like starting to build like a face-to-face relationship that's kind of playful and amicable. And I like them both so much, but it builds so slowly, but you kind of wonder like why? He's tanking her store. But they, you know, they develop this kind of like relationship, but he still has not like revealed who he is online until eventually he sets up a meeting between him and, or between his online person and her online person, Shop Girl. And right before she's going to meet him, he tells her he has feelings for her. And then real life Joe does the whole feelings dump, and then they get to the meeting place, and it's revealed that he is in fact her online paramour, and she says that she hoped it would be him, and the movie kind of pans out as they share a lovely little tender moment
with a leaning dog.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, it's like pretty straightforward. Like they're not feeling it, and then they're like enemies that become enamored with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's the simple trope of like secret pen pals who are also hanging out without knowing that they are pen pals, you know, and then sort of the sub trope of, but now one person knows and doesn't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
Knowledge. And kind of like what you were saying when he comes to the restaurant, I have that issue both, like, cause in the moment, like, he's a little shocked and confused. So I can kind of accept that moment.
Yeah.
But then once he knows and he's like talking to her and he's like, it's really funny construct of him trying to sort of scare her off from himself.
Yeah.
Which is funny, but it's also like, okay, but that is still hurting her feelings.
Yeah.
But he also couldn't just like shut off, which they do in some movies where like the secret pen pal is just like, goodbye, I have to go to Antarctica or something.
Yeah.
But that still hurts because like you've built up a relationship. So I kind of wish that he didn't do that in the same way, because for most of it, they both don't know. And then once he knows, where he's like, well, you know, I am charmed by both of her personas. But it's always icky when one person suddenly has like all the power.
Yeah.
And like more knowledge and uses it. Because it could just be like for a while, like they're running into each other and he's like, I don't know what to do because I like her, but she hates me, but she likes me, you know. But it feels like he takes a tiny bit too much advantage of that part of the construction, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I feel like there's that thing that like is happening throughout this movie where their online personas are where they're like able to unload, where they're able to kind of find comfort. Cause, oh, I forgot to mention, like, you know, she breaks up with Greg Kinnear.
And possibly the best breakup scene in rom-com history.
It's really good.
He's just like gearing up to tell her that he doesn't love her. And she's like, me either. And they're just like, cause they've been doing that thing that's really easy to do where you're just like, you get too comfortable and then you're like, well, there's no reason to break up.
Right.
So they just have this like laugh and a just like a very, I don't know, I appreciate that breakup scene because it has a parallel to Sleepless in Seattle, But there's not even any tiny heartbreak. There's not even like one person is decent and yeah. like accepts it. They're both just like, all right, you know, we had a good run. All right, bye. And it's well written, obviously, because it's Nora Ephron.
Because it's Nora Ephron. She's really good at writing breakup scenes now that I think about it. Because those are both like funny, smart, and like touching breakup scenes. But like they also at the same time, they don't feel like saccharine or artificial. They feel like earned and right for the characters.
And I also appreciate that because, you know, Joe breaks up with his book editor girlfriend.
Yeah.
That also doesn't seem to be like a super painful breakup. It's more like they sort of, I mean, kind of all four of them have realizations that this isn't not necessarily even the one, but just like, you are maybe not the person I want to call at the end of every night, you know?
Yeah.
And I like that there's nobody, because like, yes, Frank is a little bit wrong because he's obsessed with his typewriters, which is funny because Tom Hanks collects typewriters. And Parker yeah. Posey is like, you know, kind of, you know, she's extremely driven and focused, which is never something you want in a woman, obviously. But they're not like bad or wrong. It's just like, they're not, like, I could see those two hooking up instead of him falling in love with the woman from the TV, you know? And yeah. I appreciate that too, that there's not this, like, they're only a tiny bit wrong. They're not, like, bad or cheating or whatever, you know?
Right. And you know, there's, like, the extra, like, kind of sly betrayal of, like, we're introduced to Greg Kinnear's character by this article that he's written, which is about how computers are going to destroy the world and destroy, you know, relationships and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, oh yeah, well, and then he leaves and she immediately like pulls out her computer and gets on AOL. And
again, an amazing scene where he asks if she's recording his TV appearance. And the first thing he says is like, the VCR is, you know, bad and not making experiences, blah, 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 which is just like, again, it's just so well-crafted, that little switch of like, ha ha, you're a hypocritical cultural critic.
Yeah.
It's so basic, but it's well done. Cause I mean, I feel like maybe it's kind of a given. Like we care about the main couple, right? Both as people and them getting together because he's a little bit evil, but you know, he's very much just like, right. This is the mantle. I think to him, he could maybe, you know, he could be making hardware or, not that he doesn't care about books, because I think that's something that she accuses the whole Fox books of. But, like, he isn't evil evil. He's just, you know, your friendly neighborhood capitalist, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? And she is a little bit high and mighty, but in a way where you're like, it's not the friend you wish would leave the dinner party, but it's the friend who you know, like, four glasses in, you're going to laugh at having the same conversation over, but also you agree with them. So it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
Cause one thing that I was thinking about also was, cause I mean, you do get the sense that they both care about books, right? And I think maybe there was something that Pontus said also, like, you kind of wonder if what's going on is actually either of their dreams, right?
Cause
they're both sort of carrying on a family tradition. And I'm not saying they don't care. I do believe they do. And I, you know.
Yeah, she loves her bookstore. It's very.
She loves her bookstore, but it was her mom's bookstore. And like, there's so much more there. You know, when she has to close it, she says it's like her mom dying again. So like the bookstore is not just a bookstore. It's, you know, she feels a responsibility and like a, you know, a legacy. And he has the same thing. He's the third generation. I mean, he could be the fifth generation, but like he is the third active generation of Fox men running Fox books, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that part of it too, but it's just, I hadn't necessarily thought of it that way until I watched it this time, that it's like, you know, maybe that's something that doesn't come up in their discussions because they're not talking specifically, but it feels like maybe it's a tiny undercurrent when they're talking about like, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm small, the things I'm doing, do they even have meaning, right? Which is a feeling that everyone can have, but I'm, you know, maybe it's also that this isn't necessarily where they want to be.
So I mean, I love Tom Hanks and I love Meg Ryan in this, like in these rom-coms, they're just great. But there is that, yeah, I'm thinking about that now, this idea that they're both kind of like floating around, not quite in the world they should be in, and maybe they maybe that's what the online stuff is about for them. And, you know, clearly they're both not fully happy in their romantic relationships. Yeah, this also strikes me as another interesting kind of depiction of a rom-com, because it is not about, it's kind of like Sleepless in Seattle. It is not about them trying to date or trying to fall in love. You know, it just is happening while they're being enemies until literally the very end, like Sleepless in Seattle.
But what it has on Sleepless in Seattle is that they get to know each other pretty yes. intimately, and then they also get to have the friendly banter. Because I yeah. feel like, you know, one of the things about, you know, flirting or dating online, or even just like talking to people online, is it's really easy to be super intimate and, like, you know, open and vulnerable, and they talk about the deep stuff.
Yeah.
And like you can form really deep attachments, and it's really hard because the banter can feel really fake online. And like, you don't know if you click in that, you know, very sort of, not necessarily shallow, but like that simpler social way, but they yeah. get to know each other in both ways. Like yeah. they get to have fun little ice cream dates, but also have these deep philosophical conversations. So they really know each other.
About like the Godfather and stuff.
Men. But you know what I mean? Like when they, at the end, was just like, I was hoping it was you. That makes perfect sense because yeah. she has now gotten to know him.
Yeah.
And like, so they have both of those aspects. So like, yes, they do have to actually like date, I guess. You know, they might still not be compatible, but like they've had sort of the perfect courtship because they've done the fun friend stuff and the very deep intellectual.
You know what this is just like a modern update of the Pina Colada song. Because that is about like a couple who is like not feeling it, and they both write personal ad of like, here's everything I want, and then they meet up and it's them.
Yes, but no. This is the version of the Pina Colada song that doesn't necessarily have to make you angry in the same way.
That's true. Yeah, that song is kind of ridiculous.
It is. It's very funny. Nora Ephron also obviously is very good at friends and supporting yeah. characters. Like, they're all, you know, nobody gets a lot of screen time necessarily, but they're good. Even like the kids are fun because they're weird. You know, mm-hmm. Jean Stapleton is wonderful as this weird little lady who you imagine has like been doing the books since the 50s or 60s. And it's just, you know.
Steve Zahn is so good as this kind of like uber liberal kind of, you know, I don't know. He's like,
I was about to say we've all slept with that guy, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, he would be, you know what, Steve Zahn in this movie would absolutely be like a boyfriend on Friends. Like somebody one of them would have dated on Friends.
Or Gilmore Girls
for like two episodes.
And I also appreciate the conceit that, you know, it's not like, oh, the villain is their emotions, blah, blah. He is literally the villain
yeah.
of part of this story of like,
yeah.
you know, saving the ice rink. He is the one who wants to tear down the ice yeah. rink, because it's not just that they're like, there's room for all of us. They sort of gloat in the fact that they can kill all the other bookstores,
yeah.
which does speak to them not entirely being about books. But I also appreciate at the end when she discovers that, I think it's, you know, it's kind of like the ebook or audiobook conversation where it's like, no, people still love books. People can love books even if they're buying, you know, we see like Tigger plushies in the background when she's in the children's section.
Yeah.
But the kids are also all reading when she realizes yeah. that, you know, kind of that very cliche thing of, as long as people are reading, and yeah. in this case, kids are reading, you know?
And that makes it, and that also, to Nora Ephron's credit, that like, makes the predatory nature of Fox Books, like putting this company under, like even more vile, because it is a children's bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just like, but the children.
Do you have a favorite character?
I mean, oh God, I do really love Parker Posey in this.
Same. That was going to be my thing, because she's,
I know, just... I didn't even talk about her in my summary, but she's like, she's just so good.
And she's just the right level of like self-aware, and in a way that, you know, that when she jokes about being bitchy and harsh, that means she's not really.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's not, because she doesn't say it in this like sort of deadpan or jokey, but not jokey way. You can tell that like she, you know, I want to hang out with Parker Posey in this movie. And yeah. I, you know, I probably know 15 Parker Poseys somewhere in like the book world of Sweden.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely, if I'm not thinking of like, you know, Tom Hanks or Meg Ryan, Parker Posey's the first character that like comes to mind as is one of my favorites.
Because my least favorite is Daddy Fox. Grandpa Fox, but Daddy Fox he's a lazy.
Daddy Fox sounds like a bar.
In Brooklyn?
Yeah.
That Steve Zahn would go to?
Yeah.
He's a very sort of lazy stereotype of the capitalist, and I think he could be more interesting, still be like, you know, oh, I have tons of wives and ex-wives and whatnot, but he doesn't have to be
still be heartless.
But he doesn't have to be quite that cardboard. And it's not even, so it's both that I, you know, dislike the cliche character, but I also dislike that he's also written as a cliche. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Those scenes where Tom Hanks is like arguing with his family about like the business and the legacy of the business and like the direction it should take. Yeah, the dad does definitely feel like the most it lacks the kind of the wit and insight into the like corporate business world that you would expect from Nora Ephron. Like she's so good at kind of honing on these like rich, weird characters, and I want him to be like either way more snidely whiplashy or just more complex in some way.
Because you can tell, I appreciate though that you can tell that he loves Tom Hanks and all of these different sort of, what would you call it? All these different vintages of kids he has. Just like these. But
vintages of kids is a, yeah.
That's the name of my first album. But because it's funny too, because for a second I was like, you know, I want to know more about the grandpa, because it's like, well, is he an evil businessman or did he start it? And now he's, but I like that he's not in it that much, because it's such a funny little throwaway when he tells the same exact story with the same verbiage about Kathleen's mom. You know, it's charming. Do you have a favorite part?
I do really like their meet cute.
Which one?
Oh, the in the bookstore. I also think this is a hard one because it doesn't have the same kind of like punchy standout scenes that some other Nora Ephron movies have. But I also do really like when they are first scheduled to meet and online Tom Hanks stands her up and real life Tom Hanks sits down. There's like really great tension in that scene. And I think it's really well written from a point of like him trying to figure out, like he's winging it. He's like, okay, this person I've fallen for is also this person I supposedly hate. And you can really see him kind of navigating those two worlds as he's talking to her. And she's trying to like just figure out like what the fuck is wrong with this guy.
But what's difficult about that scene is, again, it has great tension, it's well written, and
he has all the cards.
Yeah, but also just like she's you know, he is hurting her, not necessarily intentionally, but like, you know, you have where she's like just like, please leave, and you can see she's at the breaking point. And I'm wondering if maybe it would have been better if he hadn't known before he went in. Like they both meet and sit at close, like nearby tables, and they just start quipping. And then he probably would realize, you know what I mean? So that like he would suddenly get all the cards, but he wouldn't go in there.
That's really
good. Because you would have this like
she takes out the book mid conversation with the rose.
Right. Because she's like, early or something. Because like, you know, they could have this fun crosstalk and like mocking each other and like, you know, mocking each other, meeting people online while not admitting that they also met their date to be online, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then one of them would realize and the crosstalk would suddenly shift.
Shift. Oh, that's really good. That's a better scene.
And also, and then you don't get him, you know, sort of, because he has to make the decision to hurt her as he's stepping in.
Yeah.
You know, of like standing her up, but then also saying stuff that is first inadvertently mean and then becomes mean because they get on each other's nerves.
Ooh, I like that. And I can even see it like like they both reach into their bags mm-hmm. and she pulls out her book and he's like got his like halfway up and he sees it. He like puts it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say, yeah, no, I like that part, but I also, this is going to be so corny. Like my favorite part is New York.
The city itself is a character.
The city itself, but just like, just the way that they build everything around the shop, like, you know, the all the little weird sort of bodegas and the yeah. nut shop, which is just the florist and just, you know, all that stuff of them walking.
It's a very
around.
Romantic, like New York mm-hmm. neighborhood.
This might also be because last night I had a weird dream about flying to New York and not finding my passport, and then I woke up before I could actually experience New York. I don't know.
And it's like it's fall and stuff, you know, like the leaves are all pretty.
They even talk about experiencing fall in New York.
Yeah.
And that like she has to get better because you wouldn't want to miss spring in New York.
Yeah.
It's sweet. Do you have a least favorite part? Because I think for me it is just sort of the bits where he's, you know, trying to, I don't know, it's kind of the, you know, the lassie thing, trying to scare her off from himself, sort of.
It's
a little manipulative in a way that it's good that it doesn't last long. Because yeah. He's not trying to like,
you get, like
manipulate
a montage
her.
Of it.
Yeah. And I feel like he's not trying to sort of manipulate her with things he knows. Right. He's even using things he knows to point out why they're wrong for each other, which I think is a really funny twist. On that, yeah. Like, I could never be with someone who likes Joni Mitchell. Like, it's a fun twist on the sort of, I know things about you that I will now seamlessly sneak into conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say a similar thing. Like, I generally, that little chunk of the film where they're kind of becoming friends, it has never really clicked to me. Like, how that transition starts to happen, it has never really felt totally honest and earned.
Well, I think it's we get the classic, like, she is sick, he comes to check on
yeah,
her.
Yeah, we get that
scene where,
and that,
you know,
starts to shift everything. Yeah.
And for a second I was like, she's gonna catch on about the daisies, because, you know, she says they're my favorite flower, and he's like, oh, I know. And then I was like, no, wait, because they talked about that in person when they were yeah. original Joe and Kathleen, because that feels like that could also have been a very obvious scene, like he slips up and says something about something that she had only said online.
Yeah, it doesn't have one of those where, like, they reveal some fact. You know, that would be...
And they're like, oh, I heard you say that to someone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the ending is very sweet and satisfying, and more satisfying than, for instance, Sleepless in Seattle, because you've had the actual build-up. Like, yeah. Yes, this is still... We don't get to see them have a relationship, but you can see why it would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the dog's just standing there stupidly leaning on them, and you can see it's looking at its handler with some, like, sausage offstage, right? But
yeah, it's a cute ending. I like that she finally, you know, she's like, I was hoping it would be, there's something very, like, earnest about that moment of, like, we've been through this whole thing together.
It's earnest and earned.
Yeah.
Like, it really, really is. It's not yeah. just, like, why would you wish it was him?
Yeah. And to that point, I think the stuff about them kind of like starting to hang out in person, it just always rubs me the wrong way. I don't know why, but then by the end of it, it's like, okay, they've gotten to know each other more. I just, the getting into it always feels awkward to me.
Yeah. But I think also it, in a sort of weird irony, it feels less weird because the shop is already closed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it would be really weird if they were like hanging out as friends.
Like, trying to pay the rent and he was.
Exactly. But now that's like, yes, he basically shut down her shop, but that's off the table. Like, that is bygones are bygones kind of thing,
yeah.
Which is still not, you know, it's not nothing, but it's like, all right, well, that happened, you know?
Yeah.
It would be really weird if that happened earlier in the film.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else before we?
No, I think that's it. It's a cute movie.
It's a cute, the only thing that I want, because I love super cheese, is that I want, because the end types out one letter at a time.
Yeah.
I want the blinky Sex in the City marker at the end.
Yes.
As a thing of like the end, but
dot,
not.
Dot, dot, yeah.
Because it would just, it's funny because, you know, internet.
Yeah.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, this has a 70% fresh rating from critics and 73% from audiences, and a 6.7 on IMDb.
That seems low for Rotten Tomatoes for this movie. I just always, this is such, it feels like such a classic. It feels like it would have more.
Well, I think maybe people are like, it's too cheesy. It has all the sort of hits. What would you give this out of 10 Meg Ryans?
Well, I gave Sleepless in Seattle a 10. I still stand by that 10. This doesn't quite do it for me, but it's charming. Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks are great. It's got Nora Ephron's like stamp on it, which is great. I'm giving it an 8. I really like it.
Same. Yeah. Like 8, maybe 8.5, but like it's not a 9, yeah. But it's a very solid 8. Like you could tell anyone to watch this if they haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, we've already talked about some of the fixes, like how you'd make it a little less manipulative or creepy or whatever you want to call it. But my fix to this would be, and this is again, like maybe he realizes that it's not actually his dream, which he realized from talking to her because she cares more about the bookstore. So he leaves the family business and starts something else. And I think it's even better if he does that before he knows that she is her. Not that he's trying to save her bookstore or even like trying to convince her and show her that he's a changed person. It's just an honest realization that like, I don't want to be the big, conglomerate, corporate, global, mega dude. I want to do something else. And it could be that he starts doing something that like helps her out or they start something together, or he's just like, you know, I want to learn French fancy cooking or whatever. But maybe she also leaves her business. Maybe she leaves it to Steve Zahn and Miss Rhode Island, you know, and they turn it into a children's bookstore / vape shop. I don't know.
Oh my God. A children's bookstore / vape shop is like
peak Brooklyn.
Oh, that's something you would see in like Broad City or something like that. So good.
What about you? How would you make this movie better?
So
how would you fix it?
To me, I like, it's called You've Got Mail. I would like lean, I would do like one of two things. One, I would like lean even more into the online stuff. I don't know if in the late 90s, like Amazon was becoming a thing. It must have been. So, you know, there's like no real discussion of Amazon. There's no real discussion of like online shopping. I don't know how safe or popular that was, but like.
Not really yet.
Yeah.
Which is really funny if you think just like 5 years.
Right. Later. Like how this movie like immediately ages itself.
But it's another sort of Efron staple of no contemporary music.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all just like sort of, you know, evergreen, smooth classics.
Yeah.
Because imagine if this had like Spice Girls or.
Oh my God. It'd be whatever. Awful.
Backstreet Boys.
There's something about her use of like retro old timey vintage music that just feels right for her movies. Cause there is a certain, even though this is very like dialed into a certain time period because of the technology, there is a certain timelessness to the way she tells her stories that I think lends itself to these kind of classic like mixing of old and new.
And I mean, this story, not just, you know, that it's a remake of a much older story, like this could work because they grabbed each other's, you know, I need moving help notes on a bill, you know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
they could have started the communication
bulletin board. Yeah.
In almost any way and just like kept talking long past.
Exactly. But yeah, I think that, like, they're clearly going for the novelty of the time, the zeitgeist with the You Got Mail. So my fix would either be like, A, lean heavier into online. Like, what does that mean? Like creating websites for your shop and things like that. And just like getting kind of more creative with like the style of the movie, if that makes sense. Like in the same way that Sleepless in Seattle uses that map, mm-hmm. In this kind of weird stylistic way that kind of like intercut some of the transitions. I wanted like a little bit more of like, this is a movie about 90s internet. I'm almost thinking like Scott
Pilgrim.
Yeah,
they could have kept, yeah, because I was going to say more of the intro where they have like, you know, it moves from very simple computer graphics to stupid boxy, you know, polygon dudes and then goes into the real world. If you had more of those sort of overlays, even as just like a transition or something.
Yeah, it just like Scott Pilgrim literally just jumped into my head and how that mm-hmm. movie
no,
kind
I,
of
I see
blends,
what you mean.
Blends like video game tropes and music videos and all that stuff into live action. It'd be kind of cool to see what something did more stylistically. I guess that could also be a make it weird. But then my other fix would be like a post credits or mid credits scene where we see her see like a section of the store, which has been called something like the shop around the corner, but it's basically like the children's section where it's like,
it would be the corner of the shop.
Oh, the corner of the shop. Yeah. Oh, the corner in the shop, or yeah, corner of the shop.
I keep thinking, I also keep thinking that, like, you know, she's writing a children's book. It should have a post-credit scene of her signing at Fox Books.
That's exactly. It was like, yeah, she's like doing her book at her little shop. And maybe she's like, maybe her and her employees are like this autonomous governing body of this inside this mega store where they get to like have their store inside, still survive, still like do what they're doing.
I like that they joke about like how Steve Zahn has taken over the children's section of Fox Books and won't let anyone without a PhD work there. You know, I want to know what happens to Mr. Rhode Island. Yeah, that's nice. I want to know what happens to Birdie too, you know?
Yeah, I know. We kind of drop off everybody, and that was my idea of like, everyone's happy at the end. We're all together.
Yeah, that's often a problem when you have, when you write really good side characters and friends.
Yeah.
It's hard because, like, yes, this is the happy ending. It's, yeah. And then everyone is watching is like, I mean, that's nice, but what about Birdie?
Yeah.
All right. We made it better. Can we make it weird?
I'm sure we can. Did you have one?
Yeah. Basically my notes say guerrilla warfare because just like I want them to just like sabotage the build and then the store and just like,
yeah.
Like Home Alone style, you know, Hook, Lost Boys, chaos, just like all the weird stuff that they do and then maybe other people in the neighborhood do. Because, you know, there's all this talk about like picket lines and protests, and they have a tiny little protest, which is very cute. But yeah, just like chaos and destruction.
I love it.
Anarchy in Fox Books.
I love it. That's great.
What about you?
Mine, two things came to mind when I was thinking about how to make this movie weird. One, I've been watching a lot of Shameless lately. Hear me out. It's kind of along the lines of guerrilla warfare, actually. Like, but that show is so much about like class and kind of class warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And it would, I mean, granted, like everyone in this movie has really swanky apartments and there's like class doesn't really exist in this movie, but this idea of kind of like, what would this movie be with just really awful people at the center of it instead of two really likable stars?
Like, this sounds like you're making a mashup of You've Got Mail and like Rent or something.
Yeah. Or, you know, or like It's Always Sunny or, you know, just like where you get these characters who are like funny because they're so awful.
Mm-hmm.
And stick them into the, like, what if Joe Fox is actually a total monster? And what if?
Basically you transfer to like a sort of a 90s sitcom, kind of like.
Yeah.
Ellen or something.
Yeah.
She had a bookstore and all her employees were weird.
Yeah. And like inept and yeah. What if the Kathleen character, yeah, inherited the store from her mom, but what if she's like just like a con artist or something, just has no desire or like, just foul mouth, chain
hates
smoker.
Kids.
Yeah, hates kids.
I like it. I would watch that movie.
And you just go like real dark. I don't know.
Where she blackmails him. She's like, if you give me $100,000 for my store or whatever it would be, I don't know how much you would want, I will not, you know, trash talk you to the media and talk about how you, tried to put cockroaches in my vents or whatever.
And my other make it weird was like the whole movie takes place inside, like, instead of email, they're like playing World of Warcraft or something. And so the whole movie takes place like inside an online game or simulation or I don't know. But I like the awful, horrible people in these charming settings. That's my better make it weird, I think.
I like it. Did we learn anything from this movie?
I learned that like this brought me so much nostalgia for the 90s, like it, like the sounds, the like, the feel of going online. Cause we're always online. We're always connected to everything. You know, I've 15 devices in my house right now are connected to the internet. Anyway.
So what we learned is technology is killing us all, but is also necessary. Very much our friend. I mean, we are making a podcast over video Zoom. Conferencing that other people will put in their smartphones. So yep. Please keep putting us in your smartphones. Next week, we'll be talking about But I'm a Cheerleader, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Never seen it.
You can find... Oh, you have such a wonderful experience ahead of you.
Julia just got so excited.
You can find our show notes, including possibly the Today Show that talked about
Today
the
Show.
Internet?
If you just Google Today Show Internet, I'm sure it'll show up.
You can find that at theincomparable.com/chickflickfix. You can support us on Patreon or on theincomparable.com by becoming a member. We are Chick Flick Fix on Twitter and Instagram. Rate, review, like, comment, subscribe. Hit that notification bell. We don't have one. We'll be back next week. Say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.